Hello and welcome back to another episode of the HRER podcast, where we delve into the world of HR emergencies and scandals. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to HRER on your favourite podcast platform.
Get ready for scandalous stories, lessons learned, and a generous dose of advice for HR professionals for navigating the HR landscape.
Our goal here is not just to entertain, but also to help you learn from the topics we touch on in order to save your business from its own emergency.
Dave turned up for work today. Dave didn't turn up for work because he says he was kidnapped. He says he was getting ready to come in for work, went stand at the bus stop when he was bundled into a van at the side of the road, tied up, gagged and blindfolded. He says he was held against his will for 3 days. He then says he was released when his captors realised it was a case of mistaken identity. He went to hospital as his ankles were sore from being tied up.
We had one of those where it's almost, you know, his word against some against, you know, what the company's trying to ask him to prove. And in the employment world, we don't have to go beyond all reasonable doubt. We don't have to prove to that level of standard that he is lying. So there was lots of stuff here that we can start to pick apart to establish whether or not Dave has been through a very traumatic ordeal of mistaken identity. Just before we start, protect your business from the risk of tribunal, reduce legal costs, and save yourself from HR headaches with our Heroes software and employment law consultancy services.
Hello, and welcome back to the HRER podcast. We're on episode 20. I'm Ollie Robinson.
And I'm Alyssa Thursfield. Sorry, we've got the giggles in this one, haven't we?
We had a bit of a laugh beforehand.
Nobody wants to see our outtakes, and Ollie's just deafened our... Yeah. What's Alex do?
Studio manager.
Deafened him with his enthusiasm to get going. Anyway, episode 20.
Yeah, I was pumped. I was real pumped. Hello!
We're just excited. We're still here and there's still people listening to us.
It's great, isn't it? I can't believe... Someone messaged... this is completely off pace. Mm-hmm. Someone messaged you about like watching it on a rabbit hole on a weekend.
Yeah, someone had gone down a rabbit hole and found us, which is great because that's how I found some of the best YouTube content that I regularly watch is stuff that I haven't gone looking for in the first place, and you go down the rabbit hole and we're at the end of a rabbit hole.
Yeah.
You know, this is great.
Where someone's like happy surprise. Like they've found us and like, oh, we like this, which is mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm touched. I'm really touched. Thank you. Anyway, the title of this one is an employee who went on a 5-day bender and claimed to have been kidnapped. Very...
You and your prejudgment kidnapped.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about... If this was in the UK, I'm very sus about kidnapping because I don't know. Anyway, the email. Hi, Alyssa. Here's one for the podcast. We have an employee, Dave again. Everyone.
They're all Dave.
This is a running
sorry
joke.
Sorry to all the Daves in the world, but they are all Daves.
We're sure you're great guys.
Yeah.
Dave's been AWOL, absent without leave for 5 days. We tried to contact him several times, text, WhatsApp, email, phone calls, but no response. We hold next of kin details, but the numbers were ringing out with no response as well. Dave turned up for work today. Dave didn't turn up for work because he says he was kidnapped. He says he was getting ready to come in for work, went stand at the bus stop when he was bundled into a van at the side of the road, tied up, gagged and blindfolded. Proper military operation.
Mm-hmm.
He says he was held against his will for 3 days. He then says he was released when his captors realised it was a case of mistaken identity. He went to hospital as his ankles were sore from being tied up. I'll confess that I didn't ask to see his ankles at this point. After that, he was discharged and then says he didn't bother going to the police as, in his words, they don't care much about crimes like this and are unlikely to do anything. In all honesty, I think he has been in a 5-day bender. What on earth do I do? Can I say we don't believe him?
So, I mean, this one's brilliant. For starters, the fact that Dave thinks that the police in this country don't care about a crime that's as serious as kidnapping. And, you know, when you hear about crime rates and, you know, the things that people call the police for and they say, oh, the police don't have an interest, I can guarantee you that violent kidnapping is definitely something that the police are interested in.
I imagine it's very high on the list.
In this country, because generally it's attached to drug crime, trafficking, you know, other much more serious
slavery,
things that are going on. Exactly.
Things like that.
Things that are going on. So that was my first sort of red flag, was the blasé nature of, well, no, I haven't been to the police because they've got no interest in this sort of thing. It was a great one as well, because it's probably the most original excuse to a 5-day absence
that
I've ever,
mental,
ever been presented with.
Mental.
Yeah, and the level of attention to detail, so that he went to hospital because his ankles were sore but didn't report it to the police.
But like, if I don't know, you try and draw lines, don't you? Like, surely if the hospital got wind of this this bloke who works, I don't know, maybe works in finance, we had like marks in his ankles from being kidnapped, surely they'd tell the police.
Well, I mean, there was a lot to unpick. So I did say to them, well, look, he's given you a lot of threads to pull on here, potentially. So, you know, he says he attempted to go to work, went to the bus stop. CCTV is pretty available these days.
Near bus stops especially.
We can encourage him to report this to the police to say, well, look, you've been absent. We haven't been able to reach your next of kin. We think this is very serious. You need to go to the police. Call his bluff. Let's see if he'll go, because that's how we're going to get access to that, sort of level of evidence. If he's attended a hospital, there will be a paper trail. So there will be either notes of admission, notes of discharge.
You check in, don't you, when you go to A&E or anything like that? You have to give your name, date of birth.
Exactly. Yeah. So there is an audit trail when you step into a medical facility in this country and, you know, see a health professional. So there was lots of stuff here that we can start to pick apart to establish whether or not Dave has been through a very traumatic ordeal of mistaken identity. I mean, my other query on this was, not that I'm someone who's, you know, deep in the crime world or anything, that if you'd kidnapped someone and it was a case of mistaken identity, I'm shocked that they just let him go.
Yeah, and he would have seen things.
Exactly. So, you know, there was lots of stuff that wasn't entirely stacking up here. But anyway, we'll unpick it as we go through.
Let's jump into the employer questions. 32% of employees still call in sick after a night of binge drinking. What steps should we take to verify the employee's claim of being kidnapped and injured? You mentioned that, like CCTV audit trail there, like anything else that you can think of.
So with this, we asked for the medical information. So we said, look, we want to see what you've been admitted to hospital for, and we want to see the doctor's notes and what you were discharged with. He wasn't able to produce them, so we don't believe he actually did go to hospital. And when we pushed him to say, look, we want you to report this to the police, one, we're concerned about your welfare. You've been through a very traumatic event. We would like you to report this to the police, and we will support you with that and give you the time off to do so. He absolutely refused to do it. So no, it's not important. It's not a big deal. They're never going to catch them. So, well, you were kidnapped in a public place, stood by a bus stop, which these places are often covered with CCTV because obviously it's where members of the public go.
Assuming
and use
this
services.
Was in the UK, wasn't it?
It was in the UK. Yeah.
We are like the prime detectives as well, Sherlock Holmes. Like, we love clues.
So we're then in a situation where there's no evidence to support what he says. He claimed that he could show bruisings around his ankles. The nature of this business and one of the people that was dealing with him, and because of some of the volunteering work they do, they were very concerned when they saw the marks around his ankles that they were track marks.
Track marks?
So he'd been on a bender. Drug bender.
Oh, okay, right.
So actually the bruising that had been generated there, they did not believe it was consistent with someone who'd been shackled and tied. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Right, well.
So in this situation, we had one of those where it's almost, you know, his word against some against, you know, what the company is trying to ask him to prove. And in the employment world, we don't have to go beyond all reasonable doubt. We don't have to prove to that level of standard that he is lying. All we have to be able to show is that on balance, we either believe him or we don't, and our reasons for not believing him. So in this situation, he was invited to attend a meeting, said, look, you've made these claims, you've not been able to produce any medical evidence of an admission to hospital, you're not prepared to go and speak to the police about it, despite us saying that we will support you with it, you've refused all offers of counselling, of support following, you know, going through something very traumatic, and we don't actually believe the injuries that you've shown are consistent with what you say caused them.
So it's rope marks and like, what, they're very different to look at, aren't they? It's like friction burns.
Yeah, we're looking at friction burns, you know. Yeah. Things like, but, and they don't actually, you know, we don't have to even get into the medical level of this. Just say, look, we don't believe it's consistent. And so, look, with the weight of that, actually, we think there's a case to answer where we're going to start disciplinary proceedings for dishonesty and failure to attend work.
Breach of trust and all that stuff. Yeah, fair enough. Next question. What is an appropriate time frame to investigate such claims before allowing the employee to return to work?
So he wanted to come back straight away, and we were saying, well, look, if you've been through something this traumatic, we want you to have some sort of support, potentially access to counselling.
Most people would agree with that, wouldn't they?
Exactly.
You'd be like, oh, poor me, for lack of a better term.
He said, no, life goes on, you know. These things happen. It's like, well, no, they don't. These things don't just happen. No, we want you to seek some sort of professional support. So he was very adamant he wanted to come back to work. when he was unable to produce the documentation and the evidence that we asked him to produce, he was suspended at that point anyway. And in some ways, he hadn't really helped himself because he'd continued to sort of spin his story around the workplace as well.
So trying to get people on side sort of thing.
No, it was just disruptive. It was more like attention seeking, I would say.
Okay.
It became very disruptive. So, you know, he'd be in the workplace. There's lots of people sort of congregating around and that sort of behaviour as well, sort of chit-chatting. He was obviously reveling in his story, which
playing
again, not entirely necessarily consistent with the trauma that he said he'd been through. So the suspension was one to enable us to conduct proper investigation. The fact that he had spun the story to a few people as well, there were some inconsistencies in some of the things he said, so it gave us that opportunity to talk to people without him being on the premises before we then moved on to disciplinary.
Okay. You said it a few times before about things. You've got to take your time, haven't you? And
yeah. The temptation is to have that knee-jerk reaction, isn't it? And go, oh my goodness, you know, and the situation kind of takes over your day almost. Say, well, no, we deal with this in the same way that we would any other allegation of misconduct or where we think someone's potentially swinging the lead. And just because it's, you know, a big, exciting story doesn't mean that we need to then kind of get overwhelmed with it. We still take our time, take a step back, make sure that we take advice.
It'd be very easy for you to just go, oh, you poor thing, wouldn't it? Like, oh, I can't believe this has happened to you.
It would. And my suggestion with things like this is always start from a place of assuming someone's being honest, which is why we made those offers of support, why we said, well, look, you know, you've been through something very difficult. We want you to report this to the police. Mm-hmm. We want to support you with this. If we start on the foot where we immediately are telling someone that we assume that they're lying, it starts to chip away at that relationship between employer and employee. And if you're the employer and you get it wrong, you've potentially destroyed that employment relationship because you've assumed straight off the bat that they're lying. Mm-hmm. And you could be giving that employee grounds to claim constructive dismissal and say, you know what, you just don't even trust me. That I've come to you with something that was significant, has been really, really damaging for me, and you called me a liar. Mm-hmm. That's enough, I would say, to get to the heart of that employment relationship and potentially justify a resignation.
Yeah, before you know it, you've got like 5 negative comments on Glassdoor and you can't get anyone through the door. You know what I mean?
And it's something when I go out and do management training, where you've got people who are bumping heads a bit at work and not really getting on and people take things the wrong way, is I'm telling managers that they need to be coaching their staff, is you always start from the assumption that someone means well. You should always start from the presumption that someone's trying to be positive and isn't meaning to offend. Mm-hmm. If we start from always thinking that someone's out to offend you, you're going to find that you're falling out with people all the time. So always start from a place of assuming people mean well and that they're being honest. And then if someone gives us a reason to perhaps doubt what they're saying because something's inconsistent, or perhaps actually because a story is just too big to be conceivably true, we still make those offers of support whilst we do our investigation, because what we don't want to do is get caught out by that one in a million situation where actually something is as bad as somebody has said.
Yeah. You get caught with the old, boy cried wolf.
Yeah.
That old adage. Next question, as an employer, 34% of bosses said they check up on their workers' social media to check they're not faking their illness. What level of workplace monitoring is permissible in this situation?
So this is something employers love to do, generally, and I would say most that do it probably don't admit that they do it. And
a guilty sort of
exactly. You know, you're not supposed to stalk. You know, it's one of the great headlines we put out onto LinkedIn, isn't it? It's how to legally stalk your employees, which is very tongue in cheek. It's, you know, and it's about kind of, you know, where the lines are for workplace monitoring. And it's really important that we don't overstep the mark. That if we are going looking for proof that somebody has done something that's either misconduct or that's showing an inconsistency in their story, that is all that we're collecting, that we're not trawling their social media and taking personal information that we've no business having or looking at, or just because we think it's a bit juicy. So if, say, for example, this situation where Dave has been kidnapped, so wouldn't be connected to social media in those 3 days,
he's definitely not,
when he's been tied up in a dark room until they realise that he's somebody else. It's probably
the wrong person. Oops.
It's probably a reasonable step to take to have a look at his social media to see if there's been activity.
Because if he was online in them 3 days, you can be like...
And it doesn't actually matter what he's doing. We wouldn't necessarily be wanting to screenshot pictures of him and his kids or whatever.
No.
a cropped image of his act of showing that he was online at that time or something like that would be enough.
Yeah, yeah, it's enough.
If we start then collecting loads of information off his page, that's probably too much. So what I would say is the starting point, and it's always that, you know, I always come back to it and it's a really kind of dry, boring point, is what does your policy on this say? Does your policy say that in situations of disciplinary investigations that you will undertake workplace monitoring, and that could include looking at online activity? If that is out there in your handbook for employees to review, mm-hmm. then you're starting from a relatively safe place, provided as the employer you don't overstep the bounds of that policy. Now, I have had employers in the past where you've got people who have claimed to be off sick, where they have engaged with private investigators to actually then follow them and monitor them to see what they're doing.
Oh, I don't like that.
So the situation was, and they'd done this without consulting me first, where there's someone who was off on long-term sick. I believe it was something like arthritis or perhaps...
a degenerative type
thing. It was something pretty physically debilitating.
Muscular wastage type condition. Yeah,
for their role, they said they were unable to get in and out of a vehicle. They were unable to walk for more than a couple of minutes, unable to lift anything heavy. Basically said they were confined to the house.
If you tell me they caught them in the gym.
They didn't catch them in the gym. However, they did catch them out shopping laden with like Tesco bags full of like bottles of water and the heavy stuff.
Making
flour.
The one trip.
Yeah. Getting into a car and assisted, loading the bags in, driving themselves home.
Just don't get caught.
So highly inconsistent with what they'd said they were off sick with. So in that situation, the rights and wrongs about using a private investigator, you know, I'm always extremely cautious and reticent about it. Did they need to go that far to follow someone in their personal life? Probably not.
I'm not sure on that. From an ethical point of view.
Ethical point of view, privacy point of view, data protection. They had no policies that covered any of this kind of stuff whatsoever.
Oh, dear.
My preference would have been, if we had these suspicions, ask the person to attend an independent medical examination.
Just have a look.
Get an independent doctor to tell us whether what they're saying is true or not, without photographing them outside their home and videoing them going about their day-to-day life, which is a dangerous step to take. So I understand why they did it. I think the fact that they didn't tell me they were doing it is because they knew that I'd put the brakes on it straight away. Which tends to be a pattern as well with some of my employees to tell me afterwards. Easier to ask for forgiveness
than
permission.
By the way, we've done this.
Yeah. And it's usually when I go, right, I'm going to call you back in a minute so I can then put my head in my hands.
Get off the phone
control
and start
myself.
Shouting at the walls.
I love you all. Sorry. I don't do that. But yeah, that's probably, you know, monitoring a step too far. There's often much lighter touch, fairer ways that we can get to the bottom of what somebody's doing without jumping in as heavy-handed.
How about visiting them at the homes like Tesla did last week, eh?
Yes.
Because that was crazy.
So, yeah, and I was reading about this, and it's for people who are off sick, isn't it? I think it's in Germany, where they've had a particularly high level of absence. Elon Musk's got involved, given his opinion about it, because, you know, he never holds back on his opinion.
Nice.
But if you're listening, Elon, drop us a thumbs up to let us know you're there.
Yeah, please.
We'll have to tag him in this to see if we can get a response.
Ultimate clout. My friends would respect me so much.
So the managers were going visiting employees at home, and apparently the reactions varied from slamming doors in managers' faces to sort of verbal abuse.
What do they expect?
It's, I'd say, unannounced visits at home, crossing the boundary.
Yes.
If you've got someone off on long-term sick who can't drive into the workplace to come for a meeting, we would offer to go and visit them somewhere where they are comfortable, which could be their house, a relative's house, or a coffee shop. It doesn't mean that you just turn up unannounced,
front door, mate,
look
yeah.
through the letterbox to see if they're, you know, doing star jumps in the hallway when they're pretending they're too sick to come to work.
I don't know. But if you or Michael turn up at mine, I'd be shocked. for one.
Oh, come on. If it was Michael, you'd be inviting him in faster than you can.
Talk about some meat meals.
He's like, it's the best day of my life. He's my friends come round to the house.
We're not friends. We're not friends.
As he keeps telling you,
yeah, we're
colleagues.
Not friends. We're just colleagues.
So it's a poor example. If I turned up at your house, you'd be like, oh, I'm getting fired.
Yeah, I'm in trouble here. If it was Michael, I'd be like, oh, I'm going to play golf. Oh, we digress. We're digressing quite a lot.
But yeah, I think the Tesla Germany approach, I'd say I can see why they've wanted to do that. Absence levels have been climbing and climbing and climbing. Their productivity levels supposedly have been dropping, and they want to get a handle on this. I'm going to use the term again. They want to grasp the nettle. They want to sort this out. But yeah, whether sorry, Elon, I can't support the managers turning up unannounced.
No, I think it's mad. Yeah. Employee questions, and I've got a couple here. First one, how should I have communicated my situation to my employer under such extreme circumstances?
I don't think there's probably a best way of communicating this one. I would say go armed with the evidence, perhaps.
Yes, receipts.
Yeah.
Receipts, you know, please.
Your hospital discharge papers. Go to the police. You know, I know some people don't trust the police. They don't think that they're going to be supportive. If you've been kidnapped, the police are going to be very supportive. They're going to want to get to the bottom of it to make sure it doesn't happen to somebody else, particularly in a case of mistaken identity. There's some other poor person out there who's about to get bundled into a van at a bus stop. So, you know, I would say in terms of civic duty, let's go and report it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if you're going as well and there's a geezer out there who looks a bit like you, you're doing God's work, in my opinion. Second question, as an employee, is it mandatory to provide medical documentation to validate my absence due to an emergency? Do they need it?
It's not mandatory. So like when we've said either in this one or previous pods about how people can self-certify, so they can sign a form to say I've been ill for, 4 days with a cold, which we're both sniffing today with. If it goes on longer than the first week, then you have to provide a fit note to cover your absence. If it's an emergency situation, what I would say is it's not mandated, but it's going to help your case. That if you think your employer doesn't believe you, or you've got a very big story that you're telling, the more that you can give them to verify what you are saying is going to help you.
Absolutely. Come with the receipts. I'll say it again. Final one, as an employee, how does this incident affect my job security, especially in light of the redundancy warnings?
So, yeah, this one was coming off the back of a redundancy situation. So the individual had been informed that consultations were about to start, that his job was potentially at risk, and then he got kidnapped. Which,
oh, convenient.
I think he was hoping it would delay matters. He was in the pool of people that were made redundant. The kidnapping had no bearing on it because we didn't use disciplinary record in this one as part of the matrix for how we scored people. So I think there was a removal of almost the entirety of the work that they were doing. So it made no difference. All it did was annoy the employer. We commenced an investigation, but while the investigation was going on, the role was made redundant anyway. To be honest, would we? Yeah, it's fundamental dishonesty. So, you know, he didn't have a clean employment record either. This is probably something that could have ended up with him being dismissed, but it didn't help his cause in terms of redundancy. And you do see sometimes people in redundancy situations, you can see the desperation. They're trying to save their job, thinking, well, if I can delay things a bit longer, it's an extra week's pay before kind of the hammer comes down, so I can get out there and try and find something else. But don't resort to this level of dishonesty. It's not going to help your cause, and you're more likely to be dismissed without getting your redundancy payment if there's a conduct reason to dismiss.
Yeah, mate, desperation does like just crazy things to people, doesn't it? That's what I imagine.
And it's something we're seeing a lot at the moment. It's a hard world out there. I'm seeing an increase within our client base of redundancy consultations, of people really trying to get lean because they think there's difficult times ahead, but also because the employment law changes that are coming, they want to make sure that their workforce is stable with people that they know very well and that the higher risk individuals are gone, essentially. So I am seeing more probations being terminated. I am seeing more disciplinary and absence proactive absence management going on, but also, and it's a real shame, redundancy and collective consultation on redundancy going on.
These things happen, didn't they?
They do. You know, economy is a very cyclical. So we do go through times of, you know, when there's booms and there's lots of recruitment going on and lots of jobs, but the indication does, and it's, you know, it's, I suppose it brings the tone down a little bit that there are harder times ahead, and we are going to potentially see more kind of desperate behaviour from individuals who are trying to retain their jobs. But resorting to dishonesty is never, ever going to be, you know, result in a positive outcome for you.
No. I mean, we're on to lessons learned now, but I'm going to carry on a bit from what you just said there about, like, being somewhat sympathetic to people. So fake sick days cost the UK businesses $5.6 billion each year. It's the questions about what emergency measures HR can take to prevent their employees going AWOL. But do you not think, like, just before we answer that, do you not think this whole fake sicky thing, in the UK especially, it's very much like, if people are losing their jobs, I feel like it's almost their own fault. If this is where it's concerned.
It depends with redundancy stuff, whether absence figures are used as part of the scoring or not. If a company is applying scoring to how they select people. Using absence figures is dangerous because if you've got people who are off with disabilities or long-term sickness, they're protected because of disability, discrimination, the Equality Act. Mm-hmm. So then you get to the point where you have to exclude those people. You have to exclude people who are on parental leave or maternity leave, because again, there's the risk of discrimination with them. So absence figures, I would say, is a dangerous one. But if in talking about redundancy, but if you're someone who is routinely going off, there is a risk that your absence could be managed under a formal capability policy and you could end up losing your job. So that is a possibility. There are processes that a company would have to go through that wouldn't be instant, but you can put your employment at risk if you are consistently going off sick. And what I would say is, if you are caught out pulling a sickie or malingering, so where you're exaggerating an illness to say that you can't work.
Or you've lied about it.
That's, you're getting into the realms of gross misconduct. It's dishonesty, especially if you're taking company sick pay when you're not actually sick. So you're getting yourself into a lot of hot water if you are pulling sickies. And I think we're potentially going to see more of it, because with the changes that are being proposed by Labour government, and they may, by the time this airs, you know, we could well have had those changes announced. So at the moment, SSP, so statutory sick pay, is only payable from day four of absence. So day one, day two, day three, you don't get any pay. Mm-hmm. Day four is when SSP starts.
Right.
The proposals are that sick pay will actually be payable from day one.
Right.
And potentially, because you have to be earning at least the lower earnings limit. So you have to be employed or have started work and earn on average at least the lower earnings limit, which that is either looking to change or potentially that there will be some sick pay applicable for people under that threshold. So what this means is, in summary, that employers are going to be paying out more. Sick pay is going to be due immediately rather than from day four, and potentially the lower earnings people are also going to be eligible for some sort of sick pay. So at the moment, if you go out on a bender over the weekend and you've still got your hangover on Monday,
You ain't getting paid. No.
Under the new rules, you will.
You get paid.
So people are more likely potentially to go, well, I'm not going to call in sick because financially it's okay. SSP's not very much, but it's something.
It'll keep me.
And particularly for the lower earners, where there's not that much of a difference between the SSP and what they're earning.
They may as well take the Monday off,
they may as well take it off.
They may as well.
So I can see why Labour government believes that there's a need for the change, because, you know, people not being paid when they're off sick, I can see why ethically that they would want to be supporting people. But at the same time, there has to be an acknowledgement that people do play the system. People do. I know that we'll get trolled for saying it, but people do pull sickies. It happens, and it happens all the time. And what we're going to 100%. See is employers now having to pay for it.
It's, in my opinion, it's about time, maybe.
Well,
these stats have been rampant. I think it's a reaction, isn't it, to this. Mm. We're going to cover it. We've covered it in another podcast, but it's a reaction to, like, the whole mental health thing. Like, I can't work today because I've got this. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, people have mental health problems. Absolutely fine. But there's
that needs to be tackled through the healthcare system, not through it. It's not through
which
employers.
The Tories did a very good. Oh, can't get onto political things.
No.
Closing thoughts,
tear
everyone.
Tear the system down. Start again. Fresh start for everything. But I don't think they're going to be able to solve all of the problems with productivity and mental health-related absences through the employers. There is a wider social and cultural issue that extends beyond the workplace.
And believe it or not, me and Alyssa can't begin to answer that, because it's much more complex than me and you can even.
That's why I didn't go into politics. I've got all the questions, and I know how to criticise. I'm going to the answers.
Cool. Closing thoughts, key themes. What happened with this, Dave?
Dave was made redundant, and the redundancy took effect before we managed to get to disciplinary. He didn't have a very long service anyway, so he wasn't eligible for redundancy payment, so he wasn't forfeiting anything in this case. But yeah, he doesn't work there anymore.
I feel like we get to the end of these and he's like, Dave was sacked.
Just for all of these, the end result generally is that they lose their job.
Sacked.
Like I say, I'm involved, so
it'd be pretty boring if like, yeah, they were all right. They'd be a boring story,
you know.
It?
You know what? He was fully rehabilitated. And everyone was friends and it was a happy ending. No, it's employment. We're here to remove the bad eggs. That's what we do.
We're here to. No one would watch either if it was like good, happy stuff, would they?
No.
We don't watch that stuff like that. But yeah, that's a good time. Episode 20 done.
Which means
the next
number
one.
21 next.
Yeah, you'll hear about what that means on the next one. But anything you want to add before we...
No, I think just thank you again for, you know, the continual good feedback. It's great to see that people are still listening to us. I know we joked about it in the early doors, our handful of listeners, but we seem to have a consistent sort of listener base, which is great. As always, if you want us to cover any of your stories, please don't hesitate to reach out on the website or on our socials at Heroes. And thank you, Ollie, for another great episode.
Cheers. Like, comment, subscribe.
Until next time, we're your hosts signing off from HRER. Take care of your HR and may your workplace be disaster-free. Before we go, a big thank you to you for tuning in and don't forget to subscribe. If you have your own ER stories or suggestions for future episodes, reach out to us at Heroes or on social media or even hrer@heroes.co.uk. As we navigate the maze of workplace blunders, remember that no organisation is perfect, but by sharing these stories, we can all work towards creating healthier, happier and more productive workplaces.